Ken McLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, Chu, Part 7.
Now, this is going to be a very rough translation. What? Okay. This is called pointing out the meaning of the mother. So to start, one has to, there are the instructions for taking hold of mind, which means establishing a base of attention. Which is needed in order to bring out the clarity of bring out clarity from the mud of conceptual thinking. So you sit in the seven-pointed posture, which is formal meditation posture. Let the breath flow freely, and let go of mentally let go of engaging the three times. So don't pursue the past, don't anticipate the future, don't think about the present. And rest right on the freshness of knowing. In the couple of your booklet, thank you. In the Vajradhara prayer, you may recall rest fresh right there in the moment, not doing anything with it. That's the instruction. Page 17, second verse from the bottom, third line. Rest fresh right there in the moment, not doing anything with it. Okay? If you can't do that, you imagine a gold Vajra, or the Shakyamuni Buddha, or Prajnaparamita about this high in front of you. This is just a base. What they're talking about is learning how to develop the resting mind. The best way for Chö to develop the resting mind is by resting on the freshness of experience in each moment, which is no thing, of course, just resting in open awareness right there. And when you do this and your attention stabilizes, then what appears as an object, what appears as objects thoughts, the movement of thoughts, and aware and the knowing mind. None of them have any substance in and of themselves, and they're just there. You rest in that direct knowing. This clear, empty experience which arises immediately is inexpressible, is free from any elaboration. It's like the sky itself. This is the perfection of wisdom. This is the honorific for thought. So sometimes translated as vision, but I think I'll use intention. This is the intention of the Buddhas of the three times. So you maintain this absorption for as long as you can. So basically what's happening here, if you sit in meditation right now with your body straight, it's very good to do this when you're tired. Seriously. Let your breath settle. Let go, or let go of any thoughts about the past. Don't anticipate the future. Don't think about the present. In the knowing that arises, right there, look and rest. That clear emptiness, which is no thing, free from any kind of thinking, as empty and dimensionless as the sky, but not simply empty space. Because this clear knowing quality is there as well, not different from the emptiness. That is the mind of all Buddhas. And the meaning of the perfection of wisdom. There is no other Buddha than that. You don't need to look anywhere else. It doesn't come from anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere. There's nothing you can point to and say, it is that. Yet it is present all the time. It is no thing in itself, yet it is the basis of all experience. Even in the most crazed confusion, it is present. Just as it is present in the quietest, stillest mind. Okay? Now, the second part. Cutting the demons in the realm of totality. In the Chut tradition, there are cutting the demonic obsessions in the realm of totality. In the Chut tradition, there are four demonic obsessions. First, there's the demonic obsession with solidity. That which appears as external objects, floor, book, light, sound, taste, smell, anything like that, that's what solidity means. When you experience it, thoughts of attraction and aversion arise. Right? Stimulates thoughts of attraction and aversion. That's the demonic obsession. When you fall under that influence, that open, clear awareness is interrupted. So, you, my colloquial translation here, blast the demonic obsession into the realm of totality. This is for you, Franca. It's actually pretty close to Tibetan. Chal is just like go, like throw over a cliff. And how you do this is, when you're resting in that open clarity, and a thought of attraction or aversion for a material object arises, you go, that's what you do. Details. P. E. Grav. Ague? I'm sorry. P. E. Ague. It's orthographically, or orthographically in Tibetan, it's P-H-A backwards T, so it's, it'd be pot. It probably wasn't pe in India. This is a syllable which is used to destroy obstacles, and it comes up in many mantras. So how it's pronounced in India, I think, pot, yeah, that's right. P-A, and then the backwards. T with the backwards T, so it has the slight R in it. Yeah. How would it be pronounced? Pat. Yeah. But in Tibet, it became Pe. So it works either way. That's the important thing. So doing that is cutting the demon of obsession with materiality or solidity. That's how it's done. Oh. I'm going to, he talks about two stages in chert practice, which are called termination and that's right. Arising and termination. And I have some material from Sarah's translation of Machik's biography, which explains that in detail. When I've gone through all four demons, I'll read that to you, because Kongtrul doesn't go into the details here. But it's about how patterns, the pattern, which is this demonic obsession with, in this case, materiality or solidity, releases. And in the same way, when, because of the undisciplined nature of your own mind, without any particular stimulus from outside, you find yourself under the influence of the five poisons, or excitement, or suffering, or fear, when those things arise, this is called the non-materiality, because there's no point, no solid object reference to. And so when obsession, preoccupation with yourself or pride, when those kinds of you get involved with things like pride, anger, jealousy, greed, fear, suffering, etc., that's the obsession with non-materiality. And you do the same thing. When that happens, you yell, "Hey!" And you know, just as you experience, your mind goes blank, and you're right there. Needless to say, this is a kind of solitary practice. It's not a group meditation. Kind of kick to do it in a group, wouldn't it?
You never did.
Pardon?
You never heard anybody.
No, this is not a group meditation. When you are preoccupied with yourself, you're feeling arrogant or proud, that's right, Gautreaux. And this is the kind of thing that happens when you think you're getting somewhere in your meditation. You know, like, oh, I understand something. I'm a great mind training meditator. You know, oh, I've experienced this, I've experienced that, you know. And you get excited and you think you're getting on top of things, right? Well, several of you have fallen into that during this retreat. Of course, the retreat's worked very, very well, because the next day has been a complete disaster for you. And I had to arrange the sun and the wind and everything very carefully to get this. So, this kind of excitement, is an engage an involvement and an attachment. That's the called the demon of excitement, or the another term for it is the God-child demon. And whenever you find yourself under that influence, yell pay again. I don't know. Yeah, it's the demonic obsession of excitement or God-child. And then the fourth demon, demonic obsession, is obsession with a self-image. And what's very important here is you have the self-image and you have the obsession with it, you know, what you know attaches to that. Now, practically speaking, we always have self-images, you know, in every situation that we go into. But we don't necessarily have to engage or organize our whole way of relating to the world from that perspective. And what so anytime you find yourself engaging and involved in, you know, I am this, I am that, hey, it cuts through that engagement with I. Paul? Well, that would be an interesting experiment. I'll have to try it sometime. I guarantee I won't get, well, that was better than I expected. My difficulty here is that the writing here is very faint, so it's hard to read. So, by doing this, every time you do this, you know, and you actually do it that forcefully, so you might just like right there. This puts you right back into the meaning of the perfection of wisdom. Really, you know, and what you do is you really engage the demonic session very intensely, so you're right, you're just totally consumed by it, and then, bam! And this is called blasting them into the realm of totality. You like the translation? Yeah? Pardon? Yeah. That's a different process. That's using opening to the actual experience and transform it. This is like delivering a shot. Okay? Thank you. Yeah, it's the... there are various names for it. It's often called the obsession, demonic obsession of arrogance. Sarah translates as the demonic obsession of inflation, which is quite very close to the actual Tibetan. Inflation, inflating the sense of self. See. Like, I mean, one of the ways this is described, you know, you inflate the sense of self by pumping it up, something like this, and then you go, hey, pop. Now, and when you yell pay, then you just rest in that open space until you become obsessed with something again. Now you can see, if you don't have a pretty stable mind, this gets to be a weird meditation. It depends on your condo. Okay, no. talk at Tenmeat Beach. Tona. Oh. So, what? Three is getting excited about your experience, and four is what's normally translated as ego clinging itself. It's obsession with a sense of self. I'll read you some notes that I put in Wake Up to Your Life about this. Now, the link with the visualization practice is that when you develop some ability really to rest in the meaning of perfection of wisdom, Mahamudra, whatever you want to call it, because it's all the same thing, then you do things like the visualization where you're imagining all of this stuff to actually, and then you go, you get this huge visualization going, and it's very intense, and the demons are just feasting on your body, and the flesh and blood and bones are flying everywhere all over the place, and you've got bikinis and offerings and deities and everything. In the middle of this, you go, and just there. And as you continue to do this, you cultivate compassion very, very intensely, very deeply, whether through taking and sending or whatever. And so it's really, really strong. You go, pet! And then you do the same thing with faith, loving kindness, everything. Cool. Okay? It says, you know, loving kindness, compassion, you mix with totality of experience. Totality of being in the same way. Yeah? Yeah? No, there's no visualization here. You can be doing chu, and you blast the visualization into emptiness. Other times you just meditate on loving kindness and compassion or faith, and it's really, really strong. So in this way, you come to know the empty nature of all experience. Yes? No, that you have the visualization going on, you blast that into emptiness. Another exercise is to cultivate any of the four immeasurables, blast that into emptiness. Faith in your guru, blast that into emptiness. You blast everything into emptiness. I like this translation. Yeah. 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 It still works. No? Oh, you just, you know. No, there's only four. See, there's this, you know Mullah Nasruddin, don't you? Well, one night, his wife woke him up. And she said, I think there's a thief in the courtyard. And she pointed, and there was something white moving. And Nasruddin said, oh, I think you're right. And he went and got his bow and arrow, very carefully. And the white thing disappeared. So Nasruddin went down to investigate it, came back, and he was just shaking with fear. He was totally white. He was holding a shirt. He said, this is my shirt. Thank goodness I wasn't in it. I would have killed him. I have more. Okay. This section is called Uprisings, Apparitions, Evidence of Success, and Evidence of Severance. And this is the progression that one goes through in Chö. As you do this, this practice, then one begins to get various signs that you're moving into contact with these demonic obsessions within yourself. That's the uprisings. And that you have a kind of stable, it becomes increasingly stable connection with them. And then you're actually starting to cut through them, and then you have cut through them. Those are the four stages: uprisings, apparitions, evidence of success, and evidence of severance. So when you say, the question that's posed to Machik is, when you say uprising and apparitions, are those the same? If they are two things, where is the dividing line? Are the evidence of success and the evidence of severance also the same? Or if they are two, what are they like? Machik says, the evidence of uprisings and of apparitions are two different things, and the evidence of success and of severance are also different. First the uprisings, then the apparitions, then the evidence of success, then the evidence of severance. First of all, the yogin must internalize both the practice of casting away the body aggregate as food and reliance on a haunted area. Once you've assimilated the cycles, let me skip through that. That's all preparation one. Right. So whatever visualization you undertake, whether peaceful, enriching, controlling, wrathful, extremely wrathful, and so on, maintain undivided altruistic intention and the motivation of inseparable emptiness and compassion as the foundation. Now, she's talking about these things as, or it seems that she's talking about these things as external forces, but listen to it very carefully in terms of internal processes. Troubled by your peaceful or other primary absorption, the spirits that live in that same haunted area cannot bear the overwhelming brilliance of the yogin's power of reality, and they become agitated. In order to interfere with the yogin's practice, a spirit relies on any resources of its own or summons other companions and gets them all riled up, and they crowd in. When that happens, the yogin gets a slightly uncomfortable sensation in body and mind, like a queasy, lightheaded, or hair-raising feeling. That's called the initial uprising. Sound familiar? Then the gathering of all these spirits consolidates and manifests all kinds of emanations by whatever powers and abilities they each have. They send a variety of problems interfering with the yogin's meditative absorption. At that point, the yogin experiences various unpleasant sights, either for real or as visionary experiences, as an overwhelming presence or as dreams. These are called apparitions. Although the spirits display a profusion of various apparitions, they find no purchase with that yogin because of the consistency in intention. They are unable to bear the yogin's power of reality, that's the force of attention. Their power is exhausted and falls to the yogin. This is the transformation. They become obedient and subservient, doing whatever is commanded. They can accomplish the worldly spiritual powers and minor wishes, serving like slaves. At that time, as a portent of the birth of the yogin's qualities, all kinds of wonderful and delightful signs occur. This is called evidence of success. So this is the transformation of the energy of these demonic obsessions into attention. Then the spirit's courage wanes, their strength subsides, and their malicious thoughts are weakened. They obey the yogin's command, promising to do no more harm to sentient beings. They become allies for those who practice the Dharma. The spirits themselves enter the path to liberation and begin virtuous activity. The signs will come to the yogin that those spirits will certainly attain the enlightened path of liberation through the force of protecting the side of the good. At that time, the yogin has severed the roots of all apprehension that her or his mind could be lost to the inflation of good or bad thoughts, and so on. Once the utterly pure view of the truth of reality, the meaning of the true nature of non-self, is actualized, you will accomplish your own welfare in attaining Dharmakaya. You will possess prolific ability to establish beings in the citadel of freedom. Hey, she stole that from me.
Damn.
That was my translation. And accomplish the welfare of many other sentient beings, primarily those spirit lords of the place and their attendants. This is called evidence of severance. And then she goes into a lot of more detail about it. But they aren't called. There are four stages, but they aren't called the four stages of whatever. If you want to put a title, this is the four stages of the progression of transformation. Of experience in the church tradition. Okay. Now, in the taking and sending chapter in here, I just threw it a little bit on the four demonic obsessions, coming at it from a different point of view. The cutting obsession with the external world or with materiality, I won't go into all the details here. The key instruction, regard everything as a dream. Cutting obsession with reactive emotions. This is something I've talked with some of you about in the interviews. The key instruction, the trouble is, I believe my feelings. Now, what the feelings tell you is one thing. What is another. But when you are obsessed with your reactive emotions, you feel that what the feelings are telling you is fact. It's not. And that differentiation is extremely important. And when you can, and so to counteract this sense, you say, the trouble is I believe my feelings. Once when I was in the three-year retreat, I was not well, and we came into the temple to do our evening service, and I was the lead chanter for that month. And as we were sitting down taking place, I had a very weird experience. And this is because I wasn't well physically at this point. Looking at everybody and feeling that they were all out to get me. And knowing at the same time that how I was seeing it wasn't true. But I couldn't move it, but that's how it was. I could see the projection in operation. And as you practice, you begin to see this. You have this feeling coming up, and you know this person likes you, but you can't help but seeing them as this enemy. And the way to cut through this is, the trouble is, I believe my feelings. Then the third cutting obsession with pleasure and power, that's how I translate that excitement one. May all suffering come into me, may all happiness go to others. Basic taking and sending. That's how you cut through your own excitement about your own progress and abilities and whatever. And then cutting obsession with self, you'll love this one. One of the things I've been mentioning in a few of the interviews is that when you have a very strong pattern, initially we identify it. We feel we are the pattern. And something that I found very helpful is to call the pattern it. Okay? And what do you say to it when, you know, your life's fallen into complete misery and things like that, and you're totally obsessed with it, you say, this is what you wanted, this is what you live for. Because it set that whole thing in motion. And you're just reminding that this is what it wanted. Total chaos in your life. Okay, that's all that I wanted to go over this evening. This is page 336 to 345. You know, there are a few good things in the book, you know. It's means you've got to dig really far to find them. Any questions? Well, I found that most helpful when I recognized, like, I'm furiously angry or insanely jealous or, you know, any of those things. And say, any number of emotions like depression, things like that. And when that emotion is up, you're necessarily experiencing the world through the filter of the emotion, you know, the six realms. So you experience everything is against you. And just saying, okay, the trouble is, I believe, my feelings. And this, just saying that, wakes something up and say, okay, this may be how I'm experiencing things, but this isn't necessarily how things are. And it opens up just a little bit of breathing space, which can make a huge difference. Okay. Did I answer your question? Okay. In practice, ask your question again. Oh, I see. Okay. Now I understand your question. This little voice said, "You don't think this is true, do you?" It's very simple. No, I don't think it's true, but it's useful to me to do this. No, because one of the instructions I've given is, if you're working with like the six realms, rather than just imagine out there, go right into the realm. So you're surrounded by it. You're right in the thick of it, and do taking and sending there. And it just becomes very vivid, and you've got plenty to work with because you've got all of these, like you take the hell realm, you've got all of these hell demons and beings just killing and fighting each other and being crushed by molten, burning hot rocks and being impaled by spears. You know, you can make it as graphic as you want, you can make up your own images, but, you know, read Dante's Inferno or what have you. Thank you. And so you just do it right there. And it doesn't matter whether you regard it as true or not, because even if it's just like a dream, which it is, just doing this brings up that contraction from all of that suffering, which is what prevents us from feeling compassion. And think, oh, if I give any of my happiness away, I'm just going to lose it right here and now. And all of that attachment, so you just give it away anyway. So it makes everything more vivid. And this little voice nattering in the background, it's just a little voice nattering in the background. Let it natter away. Okay? Any other questions? That's all I have for this evening. Good evening. See you in the morning.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.